Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you semi-live from a couple of places on the internet. Maybe you're watching live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, not X, Twitter, because they don't do that anymore. Get with the program, X, Twitter. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. It's all good. We love having you here tonight. And Justin, our co-host, is off. Pete, our other co-host, is having some interesting tech, so we'll see what happens with that. Right, Pete?
Yeah, it's fun. Life is fun, isn't it?
It is. Life is fun. That is my main takeaway every day. Yeah. When I wake up, when I open my eyes, I go, oh, this is fun. I'm having a nice time.
I'm having a great time. Oh, man.
Well, I am definitely having a great time because we have several amazing guests for you this evening. Why don't we get into it? Because they've been waiting patiently and I'm been agonizing about talking to them in a positive way. Positive agony. Good. Jeez. Right? I don't know. Oh, this is going to go great. Our first guests here, they are the creators behind Ram God, which comes out tomorrow from Massive Publishing. Ladies and gentlemen, Morgan Rosenbloom and Owen Rosenbloom. Welcome. Yo. Hello. So, just to start off, weird coincidence that you both have the last name. Is that how you met?
It is. Yeah. It is. Exactly. We share the same mom, you know?
Oh, okay. That's how you met. Yeah, that's how I met my brother.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Small world. Same season. Small world.
Yes. So Ram God comes out tomorrow from Massive Publishing. Owen, we were chatting slightly before the show. This seems to be like a crazy day for you since you've launched Kickstarter. You got this coming out. You guys have been doing an awesome job with press and pushing this. I know this is not about the content of the book, and we'll get to that in a second, but what has the lead up to this book been like for you? Because you've been putting out all the stops promotion-wise.
You want to take that, bro?
Sure, yeah. What's it been like? It's been exciting. I mean, so we've worked with other publishers before. This is our first sort of rodeo with Massive, and we've been like very, very happy with like their marketing efforts towards this and their whole team, like really getting behind it and, you know, taking pride in introducing a new IP writer series to the marketplace. It's fun because it's hard. It's difficult to break in when you have something that isn't like familiar to people. And they're like, I don't know. Why should I try it? Like I've been writing comics for about a decade now, but I'm definitely not a big enough name yet anyway, where people are like, oh, I got to get Morgan Rosenbloom's new book kind of thing. I have some loyalists that probably do that, but definitely not like in like the masses. So it's, you know, we need to go a little above and beyond just to get it on people's radars, I think. And so seeing like this is one of, I think, like 20-ish different podcasts and sort of like interviews that we've gone on to sort of promote the title. has been really fun because we've been getting to talk with some really cool people about it. And like, especially on these lives where people can, you know, like ask questions in real time about the series or just like, you know, what went into making it or like what are our plans for afterwards and whatever it may be. Like, that's been really fun with us because we get to engage with, you know, people. And that's really why we write this stuff. Like, we write it for us, but at the end of the day, like, if no one reads it, we can't make more of it. So it's really fun for us to, you know, hear what people think of the stuff we're working on.
Yeah, cool. That's so cool to hear that you went on 20 really cool podcasts and now you're on this one. So
no, you guys are one of the, exactly. the cool ones.
You guys are we saved the best for last, you know?
Oh, there we go. Okay. Nice save.
Right, literally the day before launch, so.
Well, let's actually talk about the book. This is a wild sci-fi book that is, I mean, I don't know if this is giving away too much, but it's basically there's crime gone wrong, there's future death sports, there's a lot of cyberpunky stuff going on as well. What, I mean, I know what the pitch is for the book, but tell our listeners, tell our viewers, what is the pitch here?
You want to take this one on, or do you want me to?
You're the pitch.
It's tough to like condense everything that you've been working on over like a 6-issue arc into like, okay, what's the 30-second elevator pitch? But ultimately, it takes place, you know, in the near-ish future. It's like, you know, not too near but not too far in the future. Figure like maybe like 40-ish years, something like that from now. And the world has introduced a new sport called Ram God, which is this, you know, real life sport, meaning it's not like a virtual reality or augmented reality sport. So the stakes are high, and it's a combination of sort of like American Ninja Warrior meets Formula One racing meets like UFC or even the like old school Roman gladiator games. And it's taking the world by storm, but we always liken it to like the original Point Break or like with Keanu Reeves or even like Fast and the Furious before it got, you know, too crazy, where it's like around a sport or like, you know, in our case, it's Ram God, but in Point Break, it was surfers. And in Fast and the Furious, it was racers. But they moonlight as bank robbers. So there's 8 teams in this new league, and 7 of the 8 are owned by like a big corporate sponsor. But one team, these guys, the Barracudas, are known as the People's Team, where they use a crowdsourcing platform, like, you know, like a GoFundMe or Patreon type thing, to be able to afford their like the high insurance, you know, rates for the sport and all the gear that they have to, you know, use and demolish throughout. So what we find out is that instead of solely getting the money from like the fans, they're actually, you know, going out robbing banks and then laundering it through this program. I'm giving away some of the stuff here, but like that becomes pretty evident. It's like written on the back cover blurb anyway. So as far as like the setup, the key element though of the story is our main protagonist, who's not currently a member of the team. He's a kind of down on his luck cop named Clint Bowler, who's this former superstar athlete that was supposed to, you know, be this the equivalent of LeBron James, but for the NFL, but was kind of roped in with some bad people. And it ultimately led to like a lifetime ban in the sport, and like no sponsors would touch him. None of the mainstream sports would touch him. So he wound up like changing his lifestyle completely, trying to get on the straight and narrow, and winds up as a cop. Our story begins 15 years later, when he's now kind of done nothing really special with his life compared to what he was supposed to do. He's got this teenage son, Malcolm, that he's not particularly very close with. And his son is like obsessed with this relatively new sport, Ram God, that's like in its second or third year, you know, in the league or like in the world. And ultimately, the team receives this new mandate by the league that every team has to add a new player to the active roster. And that's Clint on the right there. And a situation happens that kind of puts him on the radar of the Barracudas, where he's invited to a tryout. And like now he gets the second shot at his dreams. But unlike Point Break and Fast and the Furious, where the cop was like undercover trying to expose this, he has no idea what's going on. But because of his like dark past, where he was, you know, we said he was roped in with some bad people, like he has some darkness within him. So he's a really cool anti-hero in that they're trying to exploit that side of him that he thinks is like dead and buried and kind of pull it out of him. And all of this starts to bring him closer with his kid, his 15-year-old kid, Malcolm, who's, like I said, a diehard Ram God fan. He's like a self-proclaimed guppy, which is what they call the Barracuda's like loyal followers. And so when he finds out that his dad is now getting a tryout for the team, it's like, oh, he starts to see his dad in a different light. And the story is really about a father and a son who are trying to reconnect and figure each other out. Meanwhile, there's all of these other cool things and dangerous things happening around them that can put them both in serious trouble if they're not careful.
Yeah. That was a little more than 30 seconds, but I'm giving out all the information.
If I told you ahead of time it was going to be longer than that, you'd be like, nah, well, don't do it then.
No, that's great. That's all great information. I do want to take a step back, though, and focus on the sport itself. I don't know if you know, but there haven't been a lot of new sports invented recently. What is involved in creating a new one here?
Oh, and you want me to fill this one too, or do you want to pop
in? Sure, if you want to, yeah, man.
I can talk all day. You know me.
I'm probably just taking a break here, man.
Yeah. It's been a long day. My brother.
Well, and add in color commentary wherever you feel appropriate. So the sport has three avenues to it. We call them heats, and it's racing is one heat is one aspect of it. Fighting, like sometimes it's one on one, sometimes it's battle royale where there's a member of each of the eight teams that are on this ginormous like platform that over time each ring drops, forcing them closer and closer and closer together with different weapons and things like that. And then the third aspect, the third heat is climb, and that could be climbing up like a skyscraper building with no parachutes, or it could be descending down an active volcano. The courses change. The vehicles change and the equipment change. Now, the cool thing about the sport too, though, it's Olympic style scoring for the most part during the regular season. So you rack up points throughout the different events. And then it's elimination based where like the lower ranking teams that had the worst points, like don't get to move on to the next round kind of thing. And then ultimately it winds up in a head to head. But building the sport was like a very difficult process because we had to create something. It wasn't just like a one-on-one type sport like tennis or something like that, where the rules are fairly straightforward. This was like, we got to be as inventive and creative as possible, but it had to make sense, right? So the cool thing though is that every single player has like a high-tech suit that is, and a lot of their vehicles have it too, where they have these special abilities inside of the suits and the tech, but they're only unlocked through activating certain boosts, which are like Mario Kart styled enhancements that you can like literally run over holographically on a course that then unlocks them.
Basically, like if Mario Kart and the Hunger Games sponsor gifts like were to have like a kind of a weird acid baby, it would probably be these boosts in our sport, because something that we thought would be interesting is like not every person who's a fan of like racing is a fan of UFC, right? Or vice versa. And we were kind of like, what creates the skin in the game where basically a player from one team can help their teammate in competing in another heat? And we were basically like, well, what if they unlock a boost and then that boost gets passed to the other competition that gives them a competitive advantage over, you know, their opponents kind of thing, where it creates this unity between and link between the different competitions, really.
For better visualization of that, I was trying to get in a like NASCAR at one point, and like I like highlights of NASCAR, like when there's like someone's passing someone else, or but just watching them go in circles for a while was kind of boring to me personally. So I was like, wouldn't it be kind of cool if like one of the other drivers or like their teammates in the pit could like be in like a little like scrap or fight and or like or something that they did that would then unlock like, you know, like a nitrous oxide, like the NOS gas that gets them to go really fast. So we're like, well, wouldn't that be cool if we set up our sport so that like the race component was tied to a simultaneous fight that was going on, like in between it. And that if you were in last place in the race, your teammate that may be kicking butt in the ring could actually give you an advantage to catch up, right? And so that sort of like was the nucleus of us building around the sport to like make them all connected and make it feel like it's ADHD overload with all the cool different types of shit that's happening, but it's all works together to help them like advance and come out on top.
And are you, San Diego Comic-Con is coming up. Are you going to have the sport for real? People are actually going to be able to play it?
Yeah, we're actually doing it. We created what's called like the Crag, which is our ginormous man-made. No, I'm messing with you. We're not. but that would have been really cool. We want it. We would love to do that. Maybe if this does well enough next year, we'll
actually. You ever seen the this is a throwback, but the show Global Guts on Nickelodeon back in the day?
Yes.
So like the, I know this is a super throwback, but like the aggro crag in that show where like everyone would go away, the winners would get a piece of the mountain of the aggro crag. That was like a huge inspiration to us where we were like, well, what if they just did this like on kind of steroids.
Yeah, like for adults.
They had the right tech. And as I said, like the Hunger Games, like they kind of do this a little bit, but not in the same way. We were like, let's like cyberpunk this shit out kind of thing. And yeah, anyway, we would love in a real world situation to build our own version of that.
Yeah. You worked with, I noticed in the credits, you worked with Joseph Illige, who is a pretty talented and well-known editor. What was it like working with him? What did he bring to the project?
He's incredible. So I met Joe when I was working at Heavy Metal. I worked underneath him. He was executive editor at Heavy Metal, and I started there as like a project manager, then got an opportunity to work as like a junior editor and work my way up to managing editor and then ultimately creative director for the magazine. And so when Owen and I were working on Ram God, we were shopping it around to different publishers that allowed for the creator-owned titles. And there's not a lot of those, as you know. Heavy Metal being one of them. And when we pitched it to the higher ups at Heavy Metal, we had our eye on Joe. I mean, we knew that he's experienced, he's intelligent, he's creative, all the things that we wanted. There's also another aspect that's like kind of the elephant in the room, which is like our main character is a black character, right? And we're two white Jewish guys. So we also wanted to make sure that like we had a finger on the pulse and weren't misrepresenting the culture by any means, and the ethnicity. So we asked for, like, we brought this to Joe's, so we brought this to Heavy Metal, and then also went to Joe and we're like, would you honor us and become, you know, like our lead story editor for this? And he was like, yeah, I'm in. Well, he didn't just say it blindly like that. He's like, let me see it, pitch it to me, give it. And then after a while, he's like, yeah, this has legs. Like, okay.
And he also like made us ante up like our own storytelling and character development abilities. Like mm-hmm. I had just known him through Morgan, but getting to work with him, like, you know, he really made us level up in every way that I think mattered. And something that I've always said is like, something that Morgan and I, we're being native New Yorkers, kind of bring to this is we always do like a tight lens to a big world kind of thing. And Joe really helped us like get into the nitty gritty of that and use mm-hmm. that approach to kind of expand the series. And he just totally made everything better.
I was just going to say, with the book coming out tomorrow, do you have any plans? Are you going to stock out any comic book shops or check it out?
That's a very good question. So this is my first title as a writer and a creator because my background is in production. Morgan has the credits. I don't in that way. So I currently don't there, but it's something that is definitely on my radar that I think I need to do because I have like this has been a labor of love and in the making for years and years. We created this during COVID and like I have yet to hold a printed copy of this thing in my hand. So I know that's going to be a very emotional experience for me.
Awesome. Wow, cool.
Morgan, you're blasé and don't care, right? Is that
not even close. Every single one of these is like my baby. I just have a lot of babies. And usually my newest one becomes my favorite, which is, you know, the truth here as well. So it's, I'm very excited.
You've got the shiny object syndrome, you know what I mean?
And before I let you guys go, just because you have three legs on the race and they're all deadly, if you could die in one of them, which would you choose?
Yeah.
Well, I have a fear of heights, so I would probably say not. I don't know. Oh, man, they're all a tough way to go. Yeah, probably climbing. I don't know. Because it's my greatest fear, and if I'm going to go, I'd rather be doing it like facing my greatest fear.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the climb. I feel like being bludgeoned to death in like the actual combat one would be really really terrible. And then like in racing, that's probably going to be like a fiery.
Well, yeah, it depends.
You know,
you could die.
Yeah, it's like an ethanol fire where you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of thing.
Definitely. So whereas the fall part of it would be super scary from like the climb, it probably like it wouldn't
probably
hurt
feel
much.
A little bit of rush. Yeah. You get a rush of adrenaline right before.
I think so.
There you go. Yeah.
Great. Guys, this book is really cool. Having read it, I'm very excited to check out further issues. I do hope we can meet in San Diego next year and play it for real, but I guess.
Also, the art's fantastic for this book.
Art is fantastic as well.
Thank
for
you.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. Go enjoy tomorrow. Enjoy the emotion.
Yeah, enjoy it.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Ram God. It is from Massive Publishing, and it is coming out tomorrow in bookstores everywhere. So definitely check it out. Why don't we bring in our next guest here? She is the creator of a book that's on sale, not tomorrow, but today. Ooh. From Roaring Brook Press, called Magnificent. Ladies and gentlemen, Bethany Murguia. Bethany, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Slight total change from our last guest. This is an adorable book about what it's like to own a dog.
That's
sort of the short version here, but it digs into it in a really interesting way. I mean, just from the cover, I was like, oh, it's a cute book about a dog. But what you're actually dealing with here is dogs being descended from wolves and a little bit of the real science, the real development of that. I know you're a dog owner yourself, but where did this come from? What was the impetus for this book?
It was inspired by one of my dogs. I suppose that's no surprise. Like everybody else out there, I have the best dog in the world. It's just the way it is. We all have the very best dogs in the world. And I have a dog that we got about 8 years ago who, for whatever reason, is the one that completely got under my skin. And who can say why that happens? It's just the way relationships are, right? Relationships with people, the same way. It can be hard to predict, but this is the one that did it. Maybe it's because we hike all the time. Maybe it's because she's very quirky. She stares into my eyes. She harmonizes with me when I sing. And I describe her as part lapdog, part wild explorer, and total drama queen. So she's the reason that we know what happy tail syndrome is, which is a real thing, which is wagging your tail too hard. It actually exists. The vet talked to us about it. And she has, at times, actually hurt her tail and it had to have her tail bandaged because she wags too much, which is kind of perfect. So anyway, it's her, this whole range of her from being a lapdog and so human to being so wild at the other end. She is a hunter at the core. It really got me thinking about dogs and where they come from. And I just did this huge deep dive into dogs and wolves and domestication. And it's just all fascinating. You know, we kind of all know it in the back of our heads, the way we know things that are always around us. But when you really stop and dig into it, it's incredible. Dogs and wolves share 99.9% of their DNA. And which means your average Chihuahua walking down the street is more like a wolf than a coyote is like a wolf. Right. Wow. Like that's kind of nutty. And so dogs still hold on to so much of this wolfy behavior. And a lot of it might be things that we think of as problematic, but a lot of it is also the reason why we love them. They're super playful. Wolves are super playful. They have to work together as a pack. That's how they survive. So I could ramble forever about dogs and wolves, but I'll stop. That's sort of the inspiration. My dog, of course.
Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is just, it's such a creative, fun, cool ride we go on with this woman and her dog. And, you know, we get into different characters' heads and it's like, oh, this is human. It's fun to get into a dog's head. I was impressed by how much fun I was having on this story. Because like Alex, when I saw the cover, I was like, I love dogs. This looks like an adorable dog book. I'll sure I'm enjoy this. But the level to which I enjoyed it was surprising and fun.
Oh, thank you. I think that was the challenge for me too, was to really think about how to express a dog's point of view. From the beginning, I knew I didn't want the dog and the human to talk to each other. I wanted it to be realistic enough in terms of what a dog and human bond is that I wasn't going to break that wall, because we can't talk to each other. And frankly, Up did it the best anybody's ever going to do it with the collar. So I wasn't going to try some ripoff version of that. But it was so great to think about all of the things that I could point out in an environment that the dog would notice, or the way there's the scope that's always narrowing in on anything that could possibly be food. Just really in the wagometer that you have there too. All of those little pieces, I think, that was just the fun of it for me. How do you show a dog's point of view?
I mean, not to keep going back to the wolf thing, but I think versus Pete, who was like, yay, cute dogs. For me, it was fascinating to read this thing. This is very, very much not what it is for any of our listeners, but almost like Fight Club, but with a dog and a wolf, where only he can see the wolf and only he can hear the wolf. It's such an interesting device, both for getting at what you're doing. And it doesn't get to the level of being dark or anything like that, but it's definitely a more psychological take. Why go that route?
Just A, because it did allow us to get a little deeper into the dog. Looking at a dog from the outside, I think, as a human, you can be like, oh, they're so silly. Oh, they, you know, they, all they think about is food, or, you know, what, whatever kind of simplistic takes we might have on them. And there's just so much more going on in dogs' minds, and allowing the dog and the wolf to communicate and to show some of the dog's wild impulses that way felt like it would be a really great way to bring that to the forefront. And, you know, one of the facts that I found so interesting is that wolves' brains are much bigger than dogs' brains. Over the tens of thousands of years that we've been domesticating them, dogs have basically offloaded a lot of their strategic thinking to us. So wolves have bigger brains, they're smarter. Wolves look to humans to solve their problems. And so that was sort of fun for me to think of the wolf as kind of this professorial grammarian character that's, you know, correcting thunder, kind of, I don't know, kind of reminded me of Paul Giamatti in The Holdover or something when that movie came out. I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I'm going for. Nice. It was important to me that the wolf wasn't evil or mean to Thunder, because, you know, obviously they're always portrayed that way in popular culture, and it's not what they are at all. There's so much care and love and concern in a wolf pack, and they're very balanced. They're incredibly wonderful leaders. So that piece was important to me, and that's why I kind of went in the grammarian direction instead of, you know, the wolf being the big bad wolf, the obvious character.
What about the wolf facts? I mean, you just mentioned an interesting one, but were there any that you needed to leave on the side that didn't make it into the book?
I'm trying to think. So we have 3 books in the series, so there's more information that comes out in each one of them. So perhaps things that didn't quite fit this format, you know, are showing up in the second book or even the third book. I'm trying to think. I don't have specific wolf things in mind now, but the second book kind of focuses on dog culture and how dogs and all canines communicate. So it digs into the differences between, say, a pack of painted wolves versus a pack of wolves, and how they, and dogs or feral dogs, how they all sort of structure themselves differently. And that's really interesting. And they communicate differently. For example, there's this really interesting information about painted wolves, the wild wolves that live in Africa, that they seem to all sneeze when they're in agreement to go out for a hunt. So that's their democratic process. So some things like that are showing up in future parts of the series.
As you mentioned, you are a dog person, but now that you're doing 3 books about this, has that changed your relationship or how you view your dogs at all?
I don't know if the trajectory would have been the same, but when we started the book, I had 1 dog and we now have 3. I think it would have been the trajectory anyway, I have a feeling.
1 dog per book, basically.
Yeah.
I think I'm at my limit. I think 3 might be like, the maximum chaos. Exactly. You know, I've always sort of observed them. I think I observe them more closely. I think they've always shown up in my sketchbooks, but they certainly show up in my sketchbooks more. And then any of their ridiculous things that you might be like, oh, why are you doing that? That goes straight into the sketchbook too, because that's always great material. So even the super frustrating moments, like my dog got skunked a few months ago. Oh, that's going to show up by an actual skunk. That's going to show up in a book soon. So, yeah.
Well, since you do have 2 sequels to this, what else can we expect from the other books?
Let's see. The second book is called A New Dog in the Den, and Sage brings home a foster dog. So it's all about how Thunder relates to another dog in her territory, how they, all of their communication, which is so specific to dogs, Sage sort of observing it and trying to figure out what's going on with them, and then ultimately how they make their peace. So that's the second book. And then the third book digs deeply into anxiety with dogs and some of the ways that they take on our emotions, as well as training. It's got a really interesting arc. And of course, there's a cat in that one, because we had to have a cat as the absolute opposite to dogs and their pack history, with cats coming from solitary creatures. They just, I think, see the world very differently. So I wanted to have that opposite relationship in there.
Cool. And similar question to we asked the last guest, but since it's already in stores, have you snuck into a bookstore? Have you seen your book on a shelf yet?
No, I haven't. I mean, as you can see, I do have an advanced copy, so I have been able to hold it in my hands and look at the nice, shiny a varnish that they put on it. But no, I haven't done that yet. I'm planning tonight to go drop off a few copies to local friends who really helped with it. That felt like the right thing to do on the day it comes out. Oh, and then nice. I'm sure I will be out, you know, hovering around bookstores and watching people and pulling books out and putting them face out. All the things that authors do.
Awesome. Bethany, this book is great. It's very charming. It's so great. And informational in a way that I wasn't
Thank
expecting.
You so much for making this.
Yeah, congratulations on this. And can't wait for the next one now.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's nice to have something like this to do on launch day. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Have a good night.
Congrats. You too. Good night.
All right. Once again, the book is called Wagnificent. And it
gets
is
you in the feels, man, in it does the get best you in the way. Feels.
Yeah. We didn't really say this. We probably should have talked to her about this as well. But adorable, lovely art as well.
Oh,
some really beautiful images involving the wolves and people sitting at sunset.
Thunder is fantastic. I mean,
it's good stuff.
On.
Definitely check it out. Wagnificent, out from Roaring Brook Press now.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy. In order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And why don't we bring in our final guest, one of our favorite guys here. And he is one of the co-creators of Bite-Sized Archie. He is also now the director of communications for Alien Books and Valiant. Ladies and gentlemen, Ron Case. Ron, hey! Hello. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. You know, this is my favorite podcast.
What?
Wow. Yes. Wow. Every time I'm on the show, I listen to it multiple times over, and I can't wait until I'm on again. So,
Hey, come on, man.
Will you enjoy yourself as a guest at the very least?
Yeah. No, thank you guys for having me.
No worries, man. And, you know, I love your background, dude. I love what you're doing there, you know, with some white boxes and then highlighting some favorites. That's a great idea. I love it.
Yeah, I got, you know, a comic book shop in my house here, and you can let my wife know that you love it, because I don't think she has the same opinion. I love you, honey.
Well, I want to talk about Bite Size Archie in a little bit, because that's always consistently great, but let's start with the new thing. Let's start with Alien Books and Valiant, because I have a lot of questions about how this works, and you're the director of communication, so you can communicate this to me. I've certainly read a lot about it. As listeners of the podcast know, Valiant came back, oh my gosh, my timeline's way off, but like, I don't know, 10 years ago, something like that. And then a couple of things happened. I think that's probably a way of saying it. But now Alien Books is bringing it back and has been bringing it back for several months, leading up to this resurgence event that's happening starting in September, I believe. But what is the deal? Does Alien Books own Valiant now? Are they distributing it? What's going on here, Ron?
It's a great question, and I think your recap caught, you know, the important parts. Alien Books has the Valiant license. So okay. Valiant Entertainment still exists. The folks at Alien Books, small publisher, they've done international translations. They've done manga releases. They've done digital comics. They have the Valiant Comics license now. So they've been publishing these books. They have complete say over what comes out, who's going to be working on these titles. So it's been Alien Books publishing Valiant Comics for the most part. That's how it works.
Okay. And in terms of creative teams and bringing everything back, this is nothing to slag off the folks that were on it a couple of months back or a couple of years back, but having read a bunch of the newer books, it feels like there's a real push to try to get back that Valiant feeling from when it first came back from dormancy. Is that fair to say?
I think we've identified the team here, including Lisa Hawkins, who's the editor-in-chief here, who's worked on Valiant for a long time. They've identified when were these characters the most vibrant, the most well-known, and the most well-received. And what you're talking about is that 2012 relaunch, mm-hmm. When they were brought back. And what we're trying to do is restore that feeling. We're trying to make comics fun to read again, superhero stories that are meaningful, and it feels like a live, shared universe. So part of that is why they chose the word resurgence for this event, because they didn't want it to feel, they don't want to use the word reboot. They don't want to use the word, you know, relaunch, resurgence, because we're trying to bring it back to where it was and even further.
Yeah.
That's great news.
And that includes all the characters that I mentioned. Fred Van Lente, I read this right before we got on, is back on Archer and Armstrong. Oh, that's awesome. And it feels like no time has passed between the title there, which is wild. What can people look forward to? Like, what's out there already and what's coming up from Valiant?
Absolutely. Fred is an amazing guy. He's basically Mr. Valiant right now. He's working on a lot of titles for us. And one of the cool things that's happening immediately is that we are releasing the Valiant Hero Universe Origins. I know that's a mouthful. We can just call them Origins Collections. I've got them right here behind me.
Look at this. Here we go.
These are basically these big soft cover reprint collections of the 2012 series. Nice. And it goes across the board. So we started with Exo Manowar, and we've got the first 18 issues here. And it's going to go across the board. Bloodshot, Ninjak, Archer and Armstrong, Eternal Warrior. There's a whole host of these characters.
Shadow Man,
of course.
Okay, all right.
The spines are all going to connect. And they're all going to... Shadow Man, we know how much folks like Shadow Man. So the spines are going to connect and form like a big image when they're on your bookshelf.
Nice.
And they're all priced pretty competitively. They're kind of like the Marvel Epic Collections. But the reason behind this is that retailers were saying there's no real jumping on point for these characters. How do I get a new reader into Valiant? And this material is so good that we decided, well, let's just reprint all of it. All of it.
Smart.
So,
So I know you're saying it's not a reboot, but continuity-wise, let's say I'm a reader who was reading back in 2012, drifted off. There have been a bunch of books that have come out in the intervening time. I'm thinking, for example, of Exo Manowar, who, like, lost his hand and got a beard and went to space for a while and went through a bunch of very crazy changes. What are we talking about right now, continuity-wise? Does it continue things from where they've gone? Is there a skip point? What can we expect?
As far as I'm told, everything is just continued in a through line, and Resurgence is going to be bringing in elements from the past, characters from the past, and treating it like everything has happened and it's mattered. But we're not going to make it so that if you haven't read everything, you can't understand it. And I think that's the key, is that with these kind of superhero crossovers, you don't want to have to do too much homework. I think you may have written something like this in a review for some kind of movie that came out recently. Something about doing homework to watch a movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think we want you to do too much homework. So we are aware of that, and we want Resurgence to be a jumping on point. We want the books that come out after Resurgence to be a jumping on point. And I don't have much to share yet, but I know the team is working that part very, very specifically to make it as accessible as possible. Mm. Not a reboot, but as accessible as possible.
Okay. And this is a very specific thing for this week, but San Diego Comic-Con is starting tomorrow. What is Valiant and Alien Books' presence going to be like there?
Can I share a cool image? Can I present?
Yeah, please. For sure.
Okay, let me share my screen and not show everything. I've got like three.
I've got three monitors. Head on a weird
Okay. I only have one.
But... yeah. I've been working on one screen because I've been taking care of my son who's been home. But I just shared a new picture. I don't know if you can put it up here on the thing. So this is the poster that's going to be at our booth at San Diego Comic-Con. This is, forgive me if I mispronounce his name, Miko Suyan. His cover art for Resurgence of the Valiant Universe, number one. This is going to be a variant cover on that issue. This is going to be at our booth. And this is not the only thing at our booth. We'll also be having a couple of signings, and we'll be having two exclusive editions of Resurgence number one and Black, White, and Bloodshot number one. Mm. So there's a lot of focus on this Black, White, and Bloodshot Kickstarter, which we have active now.
Yeah,
we have,
saw that. That would look badass, man.
Yeah, we've got an Ashcan edition for that, and we've got an Ashcan edition for Resurgence number one. So look for this image when you're on the show floor. This is going to draw you right into the Valiant Comics Alien Books booth.
That's awesome. And to bring up that, let's talk about the Black, Light, and Bloodshot Kickstarter. So it has three colors, Black, White, and Bloodshot, I believe is correct.
Yeah, we went to the one country in the world that has the pigment Bloodshot, and we put it into the book. It's Black, White, and Red.
Okay. Here we go. I know how computers work. I can bring this up. Here we go. There we go. So it had a $3,000 goal. You are up over $16,000 with 23 days to go. It was funded in 1 hour. So that's good. That definitely means people are very interested in Valiant stuff and Alien Books. What can we expect from this book, though? What is Black, White, and Bloodshot all about?
So it's definitely different than what you might see from Valiant in the past. This is an anthology series. Mm-hmm. So we're getting as many different takes on the character Bloodshot as we can. And so we've got an amazing host and roster of talent. You can see some of the pages there. These stories are meant to just be easy to read, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is someone wanting to tell a Bloodshot story. You don't need to know everything about Bloodshot to get into it. But what does this artist have to say? And we even have the original co-creator of Bloodshot, Kevin Van Hook, his art is on the screen there, returning to the character for the first time in almost 30 years. Wow. So this is a really cool opportunity for us to reach out to so many creators and then go on Kickstarter and reach out to the fans directly and offer them this project directly. We've got variant covers. We've got a deluxe hardcover edition. We've got other exclusive rewards and add-ons that we've been adding on. So it's a great opportunity, and we're so thrilled with the response from the fans. It actually has been very heartwarming, as this is one of the big projects that I've joined the company, and we're doing this right off the bat. So it's been amazing to see the response.
Yeah. Wow. This is a very broad question, but for you, what is it that makes the Valiant Universe special? What makes it different?
That is a good question. I think what matters here is the intention behind everything. I think from 2012 onwards, we saw that there was a very deliberate, slow pace at which they built this world. And if you even just reading Exo Manowar, it seems like every action has a reaction, and that things don't just happen because you want to slam two people together into a crossover event. If you have these characters interact, it will be meaningful. It will be something that affects them later on. And I think that's what makes Valiant different, because when it happens that these characters interact, it should matter. It shouldn't just be, you know, they were swinging through in the same neighborhood, they met up for one issue, and then you never hear about it again. Not that there's anything wrong with like the Marvel team up, Marvel 2-in-1 aspect to crossovers, but that if you're going to build a shared universe, the repercussions should be shared too.
Now, in a previous life, you worked as the social media manager, among other things, for Archie Comics. Are we going to see a similar ethos come to Valiant? Are we going to see like Bloodshot tweeting "I'm baby" at any point, I guess is what I'm getting at?
So there is a character called Blood Squirt, which is like Bloodshot's childlike, like subconscious forming a cartoon character that talks to him. I've got some stuff planned. I'm still getting my feet wet. Right. I don't want to just go like and scare everybody away. I don't want to have some weird posts go up. But we've got, you know, once these guys are fully comfortable with me, I'm going to take, you know, I'm just going to let it rip. Right. I've got some fun.
That's going to get weird. All right.
I love it. That's what I like to hear. That's awesome. And that's a great segue into talking about Bite Size Archie, which we mentioned earlier, is still going, is still great. What's going on with that? I mean, you've got the strips coming out weekly still, right? Is that?
Yeah. I actually just finished the strips for the 197th edition.
Wow.
On Sunday. It was
good for you.
Really remarkable, like seeing that number tick up. And I'm like, we're almost at 200. Like, we should probably do something for this. I can't say enough about how amazing my collaborator, Vincent Lavallo, is. We started this back in 2020. And it was really just a way to give the fans something to look forward to every week. When COVID shut down everything, it shut down Diamond Comic Distributors, and it shut down production on comics across the board. No one knew when these stores were going to open again. No one knew when Diamond was going to open up again. And when things did open up, it was obviously at a slower pace, slower output than it was before. So I said, why don't we just skip it? Let's just skip having to distribute this thing. Let's just put it up online ourselves. So Bite Size grew from that, and being able to continue it even after I left Archie, I've been super thankful and grateful for that. So it's an outlet for me, a creative outlet. It's a, you know, pride and joy type thing, but I do also have my own child now. So it's been unique trying to, when I started this thing, where was I 197 weeks ago, and where am I now looking at that?
That's pretty wild. The other thing that's changed, and this is very niche-y, but I'm curious to hear from you about it, is social media has changed pretty exponentially since you started doing this to now. And like you said, it was very much this thing of like, oh my God, we're all trapped inside. This is a great weekly strip to check out on Twitter. It's not Twitter anymore. Have there been any challenges there in terms of continuing to get bite-sized Archie in front of people, given all the changes with X, with Instagram, etc.?
It's actually a really insightful question, because it's something I talk about with my friends and with colleagues all the time. There's no doubt that this has been impacted by algorithm changes, by ownership changes. Looking back at some of the earlier posts on Instagram, 40,000 likes for one of my comics, and now it might crack 4,000. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these things where we've pushed towards the short form video, the vertical scroll video, as the primary means of consuming our humor, as the means of consuming our, you know, our emotional stories. How do you compete with that when you have a static medium like a comic, even if it's designed for the scroll and the swipe? It's very difficult. So it has been affected, but we still have those moments where it will break through. We did one recently with Jughead and Archie trying to watch a movie on a streaming service, and right when they go to watch it, it's been pulled off the streaming service. So they say, oh, I've got a physical copy right here, and then boom, somebody breaks the door down and snags it out of their hands, and you know, like, you know, we got it, sir, like, that was close. And it may be referencing some kind of topical movie that doesn't exist anymore, but that one really popped off, and that got seen by a lot of people. So it is every day affected by social media, how they're going to change the algorithm. what's going to happen next? What world events are happening right now? How will that change how my comic is seen? Great question.
Thank you, Rod. I appreciate it. Just to sort of wrap up here, though, what else do you want to plug? I mean, obviously, that's a lot about Alien, a lot about Valiant, a lot about Bite Size Archie, but anything else people should be checking out?
That's the major stuff. I want people to check out what I'm doing with Alien. I want people to see what we're doing with the Valiant comics. Bite Size Archie, we've got two print editions available now.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
I've got an eBay store where I've been selling a bunch of the stuff in these boxes, trying to get them out of the house. And so if you want to check out my eBay store, that'd be awesome. But ultimately, what I want for people to do is realize that if we work in comics, if we read comics, we are so lucky because there is so much going on in the world right now, every day. It's not just right now, that to be able to work on stuff like this, it's a privilege. It's an honor. I'm glad to be in this industry again. And thank you, Alex and Pete, for having me back.
Oh, my gosh. Anytime, Ron. Always a pleasure
chatting
with you.
Keep up the great work.
Keep up the great work. Absolutely. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
All right. There we go. Once again, check out everything coming out from Alien and Valiant. If it wasn't clear, they are leading up to an event called Resurgence of the Valiant Universe that is kicking off in September. But you can check out books that are coming out right now on a weekly basis. Plus, Bite-Sized Archie, as mentioned, those two collections from Archie Comics. There you go.
Good stuff.
And folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. Ooh. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Maybe I'll take a look at Instagram. I don't even know. Ooh, but Pete, what's going on with you tonight? You drinking anything? Drinking?
It's the classic knock-knock, who's there, land shark. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice.
How about yourself?
Just a glass of water tonight. That's all I felt about.
Oh, man, you okay?
I'm fine.
Are you making better life choices?
I'm trying to make better life choices.
What's that about, buddy?
I don't know. That's weird, man. I've been sleeping better and stuff. Very
what?
Strange. But also, I only have spicy vodka in my house, and I really didn't want to have any of that. So,
there's a line in the sand, I guess, and you won't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have it. I didn't want it tonight. Right, we had a question earlier. Here we go. This is from Dean Delp over
Dean,
on
what's
Facebook.
Up?
You guys watching the new Kite Man on Max? And if so, what's your thoughts on it? Pete, I've watched the full season.
The whole seas?
The whole seas.
Wow.
As you
wow.
What about you?
I'm one up in. I'm one deep.
What do you think?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I like it. I'm going to keep watching. I want it to be a little bit better, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I
enjoyed it.
I laughed over the course of the
Moldberg.
Season.
I mean,
yes. If people don't know, it's a spinoff of the Harley Quinn animated series. The thing that it's missing is the emotional hook of that. And I think the thing that I honed in on, at least for me, is the real core of the Harley Quinn show is Harley and Ivy, and they're such diametric opposites of people. There's a friction, there's an interest there in seeing them get together. Versus here, we have Kite Man and Golden Glider, who are both relentlessly positive, and there's just no tension there, you know? So, fun stuff, fun inside things for DC. Folks, I generally enjoyed the season. I'd like
Bane's
it to
unbelievable.
And, oh my god,
Bane is just like makes it worth it for sure.
Yes,
but also like what was great about the Harley Quinn series, and I've only seen one episode, so you know I got to keep watching. But the way the other characters would kind of interact, and you get like a King Shark app, and like the way they all kind of like came together, where this is just a bar setting and we kind of get people coming and going, and there's no you're kind of pulling for Kite Man, but you're also like should we be, you know what I mean? So
if anything I wish it had more of the bar setting. I wish it was Cheers for supervillains, so they had just leaned into and that was the original pitch, by the way. That's not me just like writing. That's how they pitched the show, and I guess it morphed from there, because it basically just becomes Harley Quinn with different characters and less of the emotion, but I don't know. I like the animation style. It's fun.
Yeah, definitely like the animation style. They got some great actors doing the voicing, so...
A couple of quick things before we move on. We actually have a sponsor this episode, so I'm going to do a little bit of the old read here. What happens when a relentless robotic AI horde crash lands on a world full of fantastical creatures and magic-wielding sorcerers? Find out in The Few of Far Between Number 1, now available for pre-order on Kickstarter, written by Mad Cave Studios Talent Search winner Damian Becton. In this thrilling fantasy sci-fi comic, a black magic-wielding sorceress who reluctantly allies with a friendly, inferior version of the robot leads a chosen few to prevent complete takeover. When these characters learn of a plot to sabotage the queendom that keeps them safe, fates get crossed, friendships are built, trust gets tested, and of course, lots of thrilling fantasy sci-fi action. The Few of Far Between is Avatar the Last Airbender meets the Terminator.
Whoa!
Yeah, I knew you were going to like that. And it is for comic fans of Wind, Coda, and Black Cloak. Go to www, that stands for World Wide Web, farbetweencomic.com to go directly to the Kickstarter campaign and sign up for the pre-launch or pre-order digital or physical copies of The Few of Far Between Number 1 today. That's www.
Stop saying it.
It's the ad read. I gotta read that. farbetweencomic.com campaign ends September 5th, so get on that today. And just to keep reading stuff off, we actually got a question over email. If you ever have a question and can't make the show, definitely shoot us our way, comicbookclublive@gmail.com. This is from Joey Groh, who says, a couple of years out from the Substack comics grants, do you have any favorite Substack or other comics newsletters? And any thoughts on, quote, who used the grant well for whatever their goals were, like James Tynan building out his companies or Scott Snyder taking an educational route? I'm a paid subscriber to Brian K. Vaughan's ongoing comic, and after reading Public Domain and Trade, went paid for Chip Zdarsky's newsletter, as well as a couple of free subscriptions. Pete, are you a newsletter guy, first of all?
Well, I get the Greg Pak newsletter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So
that's pretty...
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, newsletters are great. It's always cool to kind of get insider information on people you like and appreciate doing of their work. You know what I mean? To kind of know ahead of what's going on makes you feel in the know. So I like the that aspect of it. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, JT4's rise to fame was so well earned. I mean, his writing ability is cannot be denied, you know, so it was kind of cool to see that happen, you know. So yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think so I follow a couple of the folks that they're talking about who had the Substack grant. I do read the free version of Brian K. Vaughan's newsletter, and it's interesting. Also Jonathan Hickman's, I forget what, Three Worlds newsletter, read the free version of that as well. But I'm a terrible comic book fan, mind you. My time is at a premium with all the books that we read for the stack and everything else, so mostly I do stick to the free versions. But I do like Chip Zdarsky's newsletter. Very fun, very goofy, as you'd expect from Chip Zdarsky. My favorite one is probably Tom Brevoort's newsletter, which has become this open forum for talking about the comic book industry with Tom Brevoort, where people just ask about history. They ask him about how things work behind the scenes. They ask him specific questions about X-Men comics. So I think that's very neat, and I really enjoy that. And ultimately, that's what I like about these newsletters. But to the point that you were saying, I think people took the stuff and they ran with that, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So there you go. We got a question here.
We got a couple.
Schreikler says, Schreikler says, what comic universe would you bring back if you had the authority? Oh, gosh, probably if we had the authority, I'd probably bring back the Wildstorm universe.
Yeah, I was going to say bring back the authority is right.
And yeah, exactly. That's the answer to that question. Thank you, Schreikler.
Yeah.
Straight Bullet says spicy vodka. Yes, I got sent a bottle of the Hot Ones spicy vodka.
You get sent amazing stuff.
I do. Yeah, I really do.
But I'm now you're stuck with spicy vodka that you have to drink.
Stuck with spicy vodka. Yeah. And I did get, I wrote a thing complimentary about Spam, and Spam wrote me. I was like, can we send you some Spam? And I was like, absolutely. I love Spam.
Oh, now so, you get free Spam?
Yeah. They have a new Korean barbecue flavored Spam. And I was like, hell yeah. I'm going to make that into a Spam rice bowl. Come on. Yum, yum in my tum-tum. Pseudo Badger says, what do you all think about season 4 of The Boys? I will, all as always, use this as a chance to plug Let's Hear It for The Boys, our The Boys podcast. We recapped every single episode on the podcast, so check it out. But a couple of, not a couple of weeks out, like less than a week out for the finale. How are you feeling about it, Pete? How'd you feel about season 4?
Some stuff was just classic Boys, fantastic, like over the top fun. Got a little weird in some points, but yeah, I'm excited about how things are wrapping up. It should be interesting. Yeah, I'm impressed with some of the deep and A-Train stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. I like the show. I like the actors. I like the cast. I'm excited to check out the final season. But like we talked about, I think they made some missteps this season in terms of some of the content choices, particularly when it comes to sexual assault and other things like that. And also, I saw somebody point this out online, and it really crystallized a lot of what I was feeling, is that they went from being a no-holds-barred criticism of culture and superhero culture from all sides to Trump bad a little bit this season. Like, the satire was a little broad. It wasn't quite as pointed. It was more just parody style, where they're reproducing things a lot of the times. And I hope they can get back to not just being like, oh, Trump did that, let's have Homelander do that. But we'll see what happens. Nelson Kelso asks, Alex, did you buy a Wolverine popcorn bucket? Did they seem to be selling well? So I went to not the premiere, but
I was going to say, did you see Langston?
No, I wasn't at the main premiere, wherever that was in New York, where like NSYNC was there and Madonna and everything.
Lincoln Center.
Lincoln Center. Thank you, Pete. Were you there? You were following along?
No, I was just watching Langston's feed, you know, just supporting the cause.
Yeah, for sure. I went to see it up at the AMC Lincoln Square last night. And I will say, though, that this was the, I'm going to bring this up for our viewing audience, this was the site that greeted me when I got upstairs to the IMAX theater. It's still lighting up here. I thought I was going to talk long enough, but it didn't happen. Here we go. So this is what was waiting for me, was in the world's longest table of Wolverine, Deadpool and Wolverine popcorn buckets, which, if you haven't seen it, it's Wolverine with an enormous open mouth that you reach into to get your popcorn out of. It's supposed to be a blowjob doll joke, but they made the mouth too large. Nothing, you know, against whatever. But I don't know. It's also, these popcorn buckets, I think, are annoying. Like, I'd rather just eat my popcorn rather than reaching into something and having to pull it out through somebody's mouth.
Well, it all started with the worm there. And so, you know, things got, you know.
Yeah. But this is not a one-up. They didn't one-up it. Like, they were like, this is going to be even raunchier. I'm sure there was a version of this popcorn bucket that had a smaller mouth and it was raunchier, and this one just seems like he's
yelling. It's gotta be big enough you can reach your hand in and get the popcorn, bro.
No, but you make it funny for the sake of the joke. You sacrifice the popcorn, bud. Come on. Anyway, so I got one of those and brought it home in my backpack and gave it to my kids, and they've been having a great time eating popcorn out of it, so there you go. This is from Michael Tillman, Cobra Kai. Have we started it yet? I have not started it yet. Have you started it yet, Pete?
Yeah, well, the new season, no, but I have watched Cobra Kai. I mean, it's a fun nostalgia hit for sure. And I was really impressed with first couple of seasons, what they were doing and how they were doing it. It was such a fun idea to kind of look at the villains kind of like a point of view and that kind of stuff. So it was interesting. And I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I haven't watched the new episodes yet, but I'm curious to check out the final season. Hopefully they all karate kick each other, but I guess we'll see. Stray Bullet has a couple of quick things. He says, I subscribe to Andre Darlington's newsletter, author of Gotham City Cocktails. Nice. Great call. Stray Bullet says, I also subscribe to Kelly Thompson's Substack after that week. What he means is that Kelly Thompson gave a big shout out to Stray Bullet and his Powerpuff Girls cocktail recipe, yeah, which was included in there, which is very nice, very complimentary about it. Stray Bullets finally says, does Alex have any cool Nutflex freebies he's received?
He's been
lately?
Nutflexing all over us with this bullshit.
Spam, popcorn buckets. I got a party pack from 7-Eleven. That was pretty cool.
Ooh, what'd you get in that?
Literal party pack. Like, it was party plates and... napkins and stuff. It was not that exciting. But it was very nice of them to send it. So thank you, 7-Eleven, my favorite restaurant. And that is it for your audience questions. We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is part we get back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free.
We got one from Twitch.
From Midtown Zedman. Comics Online. You know, because if you had $25, you'd want to get some comics.
Mm-hmm. Zedman immediately did a hand up over on Twitch. So I think it's Zedman. And I'm telling you, can I take Twitch a guess?
Where it's at.
I bet you're... never mind. I'm not even going to say it.
What?
Never mind. It was a dumb joke. Don't worry. Go ahead. Take it away, Pete.
All right. Well, I did this for you because you've been riding my ass.
Oh, you did something more current?
Yes, something I did. Dime? Yeah, because the Slack really kind of blew up.
Was it President Biden's presidential campaign?
Wow, dude.
Am I right?
Anyways, today's trivia is on comic book badasses. And a small nod to the legend, Shannon Doherty. R.I.P. Brenda. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. This badass first appeared in comics in 1941 and was once in the Department of Meta-Human Affairs. Is it A, Wonder Woman? B, who do you think you are painting your John Deere tractor clear? C, John Shear.
That's a hard one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Michael Tillman, by the way, says, I think we guilted him into Shannon Doherty. That's correct. He's still late, but I'll forgive it. And Zenman says, I'll go with A.
A is correct.
Wow.
Here we go. Question number two. This badass has what is called the right hand of doom. Who are we talking about? Is it A, Darkwolf, B, Hellboy, or C, Chuck LaFont?
Chuck LaFont?
Yeah, I just thought that's a really funny name.
Yes.
Chuck LaFont.
Your name is Pete LePage. I feel like you're not qualified to criticize Chuck LaFont.
I still think it's funny.
Okay. B? Is it B?
B is correct.
Wow.
Here we go. Question number three. Yeah, keep on their toes, man. This badass was one of the best things to come out of The Walking Dead. Is it A, Michonne? B, you don't have to live your name, you fucking overloved piece of shit. C, Craig Brakowski.
Pete. It's definitely A, says
yes.
Zenman.
Wow. There we go.
Congratulations, Zenman. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get it off to you. But Pete, what is the secret movie you were referencing?
We're talking about the 1988 banger, Heathers. You were right, Michael Tillman.
Wow. All right, there we go. Before we wrap up here, new comic books coming out tomorrow.
Oh,
lots
yeah.
of big stuff happening. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'll tell you, Zatanna, Bring Down the House number 2, as well as Feral number 5. How you feeling, Zalbatron? You feeling a little feisty? You want to get fighting over some stuff? Or what are you thinking?
I don't know. I'm surprised that you didn't mention that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1 is coming out tomorrow. That's a big deal from Jason Aaron and Joelle Jones. So I'm excited.
We've talked about it.
We did. We talked about it, but it's actually coming out tomorrow. And if you were a true Turtles fan, you'd know that. I am excited
dare you,
for...
Sir.
NYX is coming out from Marvel. That should be interesting, from Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Also, yeah. Absolute Power Origins from John Ridley, where he's telling the definitive origin of Amanda Waller. I believe when we had John Ridley on our live show, he said he'd be writing a character for DC that he's never written before, but it will this is that series, so there you go. And also the latest Supermassive, which is a collection of the Massiverse characters jamming together. Always looking forward to that. Lots more stuff coming out, and all those things except for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles will be in our Stack podcast tomorrow, Wednesday, 9 a.m. at the Stack feed and the dedicated Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A bunch of people we want to thank for coming on. Thank you to Bethany Murguia for talking about Wagnificent. That is on sale today from Roaring Brook Press. Also, Owen Rosenblum and Morgan Rosenblum, check out Ram God from Massive Publishing. That's out tomorrow as we're taping this. Ron Case, Director of Communications for Alien Books and Valiant. You can check out all the stuff they have going on leading up to Resurgence of Valiant, as well as the Bloodshot, Black, White, and Bloodshot anthology on Kickstarter, and Bite-Sized Archie, always great. Next week on the show, Brendan Chen is going to be here to talk about Just a Goblin, and Deb Aoki and Christopher Bookshire from Mangasplaining are going to be here to mangasplain a couple of things to us. Comic Book Club News, our news podcast Monday through Friday.
Hey, how's that going?
Going pretty good. Almost to 250 episodes, I believe. Wow. Let's Hear It for the Boys, our boys podcast that we mentioned earlier, just wrapped up season 4. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourself out there.